7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I arrive at my appointment, I am greeted by the ladies of the front desk with a knowing smile. They made the effort to know my name. It seems so inconsequential, but it is my first interaction of a very long day. The moment I walk into your building, I feel safe. I know I am surrounded by people who care. Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. This is Dr. Tom Ianelli, your favorite cancer survivorship bus driver. My friend, co-host, spiritual brother, Angel Santana, on the other side of the glass.
I am rocking the Croc Podcast jersey. I'm excited. This is what happens to all the gentlemen out there when you are sleep deprived. And I've only had a new child for about 4 days, 5 days, actually. And I forgot to hit the mute button. We're going to leave that in on purpose so that I could remember that 15 years
from now. What an unauspicious way to announce the birth of your son, Angel. Last time we talked about the impending birth of your child, you didn't give me the opportunity to congratulate you. And I am here in proxy of the entire Croc Nation. We love you. We want to embrace you and Rachel and Ariel and the new addition, whose name is?
His name is Noah Leslie Santana.
Noah Leslie Santana, who came into this world on January
24th at 1:23 a.m. at 7 pounds, 1.9 ounces, and 21 inches long.
Croc Nation, that's the last time Angel slept.
Yeah, that's why I forgot to hit the mute button.
and today is Sunday, January 30th. So, Angel, what'd you think about that little, patient blurb? Pretty special, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's got me intrigued, and I can't wait to get right into it, to be very honest with you.
I'm actually even more excited because Croc Nation, what we're going to do today is we're going to begin a six segment module. Say that fast 5 times. A six segment module on the role of kindness in cancer care. And what that lady was mentioning was the little things that people do at the cancer center to make people feel warm, to make them feel loved. And it really just is showing a tiny bit of kindness.
Absolutely. I'm loving it. I can't wait. Anything with kindness and just when you said that, as we were talking, I was actually reliving the moment with my wife because in a great big shout outs, because, you know, we're all colleagues at the end of the day in our same hospital. The way they took care of my wife was superb. She was in a lot of pain. We missed the epidural. So because he was just coming so fast, and the way they treated her, the way they were able to just continue to nurse her and keep us calm, despite the fact, you know, of the ring of fire. But it was superb. Awesome job.
Yeah. So you understand. So again, we are doing another homage to our friends Len Berry and Raina Audish, along with Tracy Donaher and Robert Chapman. I hope I'm saying everybody's name correctly. And the name of the paper that we're going to be going off of is The Role of Kindness in Cancer Care, as I mentioned. Also, we're going to be looking at an oncology reflection from a doctor. This will be a little more difficult, but I'm going to try. Itrat Medi. So we're going to make sure Dr. Medi, Dr. Audish, and Dr. Berry get connected so they can listen to this podcast, being that we are honoring their work. So when Raina, Len, Tracy, and Robert talk about kindness in cancer care, their initial sentence in the abstract of the paper I found to be amazingly unique and wonderful. And I'm going to read it verbatim. As a matter of fact, many of the things that you'll hear from my mouth today aren't really my words. They're from these, you know, astounding and astute, scholars. The wonders of high-tech cancer care are best complemented by the humanity of high-touch care. Mm. high touch care. Well, isn't that wonderful?
I think that should be something used on a daily basis, that terminology.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I have to tell you, I was the Richard Dawson of cancer care. I used to hug everybody. Coronavirus has taken that away from us as caregivers who really, patients that were having a hard time or emotional and needed a hug. Sadly, that touch is now a fist pump or a fist bang or an elbow bang or something like that. But, you know, we will get back to hugging our patients and giving them emotional support. Again, I'm going to say, I think it's so wonderful. I'm going to say it again. The wonders of high-tech cancer care are best complemented by the humanity of high-touch care. Simple kindnesses, like the kindness that they mentioned in that small little blurb that we started our podcast with, can help to diffuse negative emotions that are associated with a cancer diagnosis and treatment, and may even help to improve patient outcomes, which will be another podcast. On the basis of our experience in cancer care, we've proposed 6 types of kindness: deep listening, empathy, generous acts, timely care, gentle honesty, and support for the family caregiver. Now, we've done generosity, and we'll kind of go back into it. And when I was doing my deep dive on this paper and Dr. Mehdi's paper, I thought I could probably get all 6 of them in 30 minutes. However, each one of them is so important that I think they deserve a podcast, each a stand-apart podcast, with today's introduction to kindness. And we're also going to start with deep listening. Mm-hmm. Now, listening is a very, very important quality. I have to tell you, out of all of the qualities that God gave me and all of the gifts that God gave me, He did not make me a great listener. You know, I'm that guy in the movie theater who can't shut the hell up. I'm that guy who, when you're trying to tell a story, I'll interrupt you 8 million times. I'm the guy who overtalks you by thinking that what I have to say is more important than you. I am also the loud guy. I'm the guy who, when they talk so loud that no one else can talk. So this podcast is especially good for me, you know, who needs to quiet the heck down and start listening to be a better clinician. So let's talk a little bit about about what I found to be another profound observation, not by Dr. Mehdi, but by Dr. Mehdi's mentor. We often used to ask him to recommend a good book to read and consult. He used to reply very philosophically, "Your patients are your books. Go and read them." I think that is so beautiful, so amazing, and I'm going to comment on that in a second. We then were never aware of the depth of his notion. While looking back on this stage of my profession, I feel proud and do not doubt that I learned a lot from my patients, maybe more than anything else. This practical real-time learning is certainly not less and possibly more as compared to the learning from all the books that I ever consulted. Mm. And I have to tell you, that is a true, true story. Your patients, our patients, to all the physicians listening, to all the nurses listening, to all the physical therapists, the radiation therapists, the dosimetrists, the physicists, the occupational therapists, everybody listening to this podcast on our end of the chair, our end of the table, we are so blessed to have our patients as our teachers. And we don't really realize it when we're going through our training, but our mentors and our professors and our teachers, right, really teach us. They may not tell us they're teaching us, but they're teaching us that our patients have the answers to all the questions that we have, all the information that's necessary. You don't need to go get a CAT scan or an MRI or a PET scan to be able to know what's going on. And sometimes just listening and saying the right keywords and phrases is enough to get the puzzle unlocked, to learn from your patients. So I just thought that was absolutely magnificent. And we're going to get into a couple of examples of that in a few minutes. But let's go back now, going back and forth between the papers. We'll get back to Dr. Burry's and Dr. Audish's paper. Cancer care is a high emotion service. We know that, right, Angel? That's why we're doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
It is characterized by a lack of control, feelings of powerlessness, severe consequences if things go wrong, high complexity and long duration. Stress, worry, fear are common in this group of patients. Simple acts of kindness can help to diffuse negative emotions. Accurate diagnosis and treatments are paramount. So the way our patients are treated, of course, is first and foremost. But how we deliver this care also matters. And by giving these small little acts of kindness can make a big, big difference. So let's define kindness. Kindness, I'm going to ask you, Angel, how do you define kindness?
It's funny you bring that up. On my show, I define kindness by saying my mother's name. That's a tribute to her. But kindness to me is an individual who will do for others before they do for themselves. They don't think twice about their actions because they're doing it from the heart.
Beautiful, beautiful. And according to the paper, this is very close. Kindness may be defined as purposeful, voluntary action undertaken with sensitivity to the needs or desires of another person and actively directed toward fostering their well-being or flourishing. Treating patients and their families with kindness by getting to know them, empathizing, listening, and responding to their needs earns their trust. Kindness is similar to the term emotional care, whereby clinicians use warmth, reassurance, and empathy to reduce fear and anxiety. So Len and Raina are saying, we're going to use the term kindness because it's simpler and it makes more sense in the context of what we're trying to do for our survivors. But emotional care is just another nomenclature for the same thing. Although clinicians likely view kindness as requisite component of providing care, there are also a lot of stressors that occur that try to prohibit or prevent us from achieving kindness and care. We talked a little bit about this last week. Number one, the complexity of our care, the high tech of our care. We talked about the financial pressures, to make money for our institutions. All of these can provide a barrier between us and the ability to extend kindness to our patients. These are obstacles. Mm. In addition, we have to battle our own complexities. So our own inner, trend to burn out. So people in oncology, caregivers in oncology who care have a tendency of burning out because it's such an emotionally draining profession and environment, and medicine in general, of course, but oncology especially. So we have to make sure that we recharge our batteries, that we are able to get buy-in from our bosses, our institutions, our healthcare systems to recognize the needs that we need, the needs we have to be able to be refreshed to provide this kindness. And it's really, really important for us to put those two things together in order to achieve what we want. So Angel, today we're going to start off with deep listening. Again, talking about me not being a good listener. This week, I had two patients that I was a very deep listener on, and I really got paid back in spades with great, great rewards for being that listener. So I had a patient, we'll call her Betty. Her name isn't Betty, but we're going to call her Betty. Betty is a woman in her 70s that came to see me for lung cancer. And when we were talking, I always ask, you know, what is your essence? You know, what are you all about? Tell me what's important to you. And as it turns out, Betty was a professional singer. She sang in all the jazz clubs in New York at the same time that my father played in those clubs. They knew each other, of all things. She knew of him and he knew of her, I'm sure. Although, you know, my father's been dead for quite a long time. I also asked her to tell me a story. One of her favorite stories about being a renowned jazz singer in the day, especially being a woman of color in those days, you know, you didn't get much respect. And right. Speaking of Aretha, right? Respect.
Yeah, yeah.
But she told me the story that one day she was in Boston and she was playing a club and she was the headliner for B.B. King. Now, B.B. King was a well-known son of a bitch. Excuse the expression, a great genius, blues guitarist and innovator. He went up to Betty and he said, Betty, if you think you're using my band for your set, you're out of your mind. So B.B. King wouldn't let her use his band. Now, Betty didn't go up to Boston with her own band. She was just assuming that she would use the band that was going to be playing for the headliner.
Oh, wow.
And they went at it and she stood toe to toe with him. And eventually she made him listen to her sing and she gained his respect and she was able to use his band. But isn't that a great story?
It's amazing. You would never think that. Did she ever say why she thought he wouldn't automatically want to use the band? Maybe because
Angel, that's not important. What's important?
I couldn't help it.
I know, but what's important here is that I would have never known that story.
No, definitely not. This goes to deep listening. I'm just deep in thought, and I couldn't help but ask more questions.
Exactly. Now I will tell you. That you and I also were deep listeners when we did Ramon Ruta's amazing 2-hour podcast about his experience as a cancer survivor and his history as an advocate for the poor, for the homeless, and his meeting with Jimmy Carter. Wow. You know, I remember recording that podcast and I remember I was obviously enthralled by listening to the story, but this is before the board gave us our 30-minute moratorium. But be it as it may, whether they gave it to us or not, we just let Ramon talk. And
yeah,
he talked and it got more interesting. And we were on the edge of our seats, but that podcast turned out to be 2 hours. And boy, I am so glad we let him talk. And then the last example I had just from this week before I used Dr. Mehdi's example was a gentleman who was a Vietnam vet, a Marine, you know, Marine vet who served in Vietnam, 65 and 66. He was one of the first troops that went into Southeast Asia. And he told me that the Marines were very good to the Vietnamese children. They really enjoyed them. And, you know, just the armed forces, Marines in particular, are really very kind to the children or whatever of the areas that they're involved in. And he mentioned that the children were sometimes carriers of death. So they would put poison or they would put acid in their drinks. And there was one, one circumstance when one little 9-year-old kid the soldiers, the Marines let them play on the tank. And the kid was playing on the tank and he took out two grenades from his, from his clothing and he threw them into the tank. And the patient was sitting right on the bottom of the tank, getting out of the sun. And the two grenades exploded and killed his two friends inside the tank. And he was the one who had to clean out the tank and take out the bodies and the whole thing. And had I not listened, I would have never heard that story. It was so emotional and it was so touching.
Oh, my God.
And so terrible. But this is something that one of our patients lived through. And it was important for us to know that part of his life because now he's in his 70s, and he has his own medical problems and he has a cancer he's trying to fight. And if you look at this guy now, he doesn't look like, you know, a tough ass Marine. You know, I mean, he's still rough and tumble, but you would have never known that he had to experience that. That's not an experience that everybody goes through. Betty's experience with B.B. King, that's not an experience that somebody goes through. Listening to Ramon Ruta talk about his meeting with Jimmy Carter, that's not something that people go through every day. So it's really important for us to be great listeners. And even more than that, I wanted to say, kindness requires listening intently to patients and family members with minimal interruptions. So again, what is Tom really bad at? Tom is super bad at interrupting people, and I have to really get better at that. We also have to try to draw out their preferences, try to draw out their feelings, and be truly present. So a lot of times people just don't talk, right? And you think that's deep listening, but deep listening is not just being silent. It's actually being part of the conversation, but you're just withholding what you have to say for that time being. So I think that's really important. That's why I love when they talk, they don't just say listening is good for kindness. They say deep listening. And again, being truly present during the encounter demonstrates respect and fosters trust. Another thing we have to be careful for, and I also love this as well. There's a little expression I just picked up from Len and Raina. The electronic medical record we mentioned can be an impediment, to deep listening. They call it the eye patient, you know, the small eye patient, like iPad, iPod. Yeah. You know, whatever they called it, the eye patient, because here we are on our computers and our fingers are going fast and we're going through the medical records. We're not looking at the patients and we're not really listening because we're distracted by the records. So what I try to do is I try to memorize the chart before I go to see the patient. And I have my electronic medical record that I don't even look at until we're all done talking and I'm getting all these great stories and things like that. And I only use the computer really to show them films or visuals or videos and things like that to help them understand their disease. Then and only then will I do my documentation. It's so much paperwork that we have to do. And we're so overwhelmed as I said, as caregivers, and the responsibility for compliance and litigation and all that other kind of stuff, litigious society and all this kind of stuff, that we write everything down, document everything. And the thought of getting behind on one record is very ominous to us, because it means that we're going to be, you know, we'll be seeing patients all day, 20, 25, 30 patients, whatever. And if we don't document things, we might forget things. We may not do it, or we might be here all night. You know, God forbid I should miss my dinner. You know, that's not going to be a good day. So we have to make sure that we really don't worry about the documentation. Don't worry about that. There's plenty of time for that. Concentrated on the patient. I love that. So eye patient. Deep listening shifts the paradigm from asking a patient what's the matter to inquiring what matters to you. So it's not so much what's the matter, it's what matters to you. Deep listening can also bring upon us information about what some of the patient's aspirations and needs and desires, what their legacy is, what it is that they want to leave behind. And I've known many doctors, again, because I'm an oncologist, I know mostly oncologists, but we do a lot of, I want to use the term make-a-wish-y type stuff. So patients that, you know, want to do certain things or haven't done them, if they're within our power, you know, we try. I mean, our nurse navigators, our nurses, our, you know, the infusion staff, I mean, they would take money out of their own pocket to make something happen, fly a family member in from Guam who hasn't seen, you know, that to say goodbye, you know, do all those types of things that these fine people do. I think that the example that Len and Raina mentioned is that there was a frail elderly man dying of lung cancer, and he had a wish to go to Mecca, to see Mecca, to do a pilgrimage to Mecca. And they basically went through, you know, what do you want out of the rest of your life, whatever's left of your life, what do you want, what do you choose quality, what kind of dangers, you know, to a trip like that? Would you be willing to risk? And they got him there. So he was able to go to Mecca, returned, and died 3 months later. My friend that I never met, Dr. Mehdi, who maybe one day we will meet, maybe he'll come on the podcast. He tells this paper that he goes through. It's actually called an oncology reflection. I actually like that. Talks about a patient he met. Now, he was exhausted. And Angel, looking at you, I know you understand what that word means. He was exhausted. He had done his shifts. He was ready to go home. It was the end of the day. It was the week before Christmas. And he had a patient with acute leukemia. And he went in to round on him before he left. And the patient said, "Doc, do you have the results of my testing?" And Dr. Mehdi did have the results. They were not good. And he was thinking, let me talk to him tomorrow when I have the energy and I can really give him my full attention. And the guy said, quote unquote, "I can understand what the reports might be." So imagine how powerful that was to him. He sat with him, not for 20 minutes, not for 30 minutes, not for an hour, not for 2 hours, not for 3 hours. He sat with that guy for 4 hours. And I don't know how he knew this, but he did know this. I don't know how. But of the 4 hours, the patient talked for 220 minutes and he spoke for 20 minutes.
Wow.
Story gets better. That night, the patient died. The patient died that night. So when he came in the next day, the other doctors told him, you know, "Hey, you know, this doctor, you know, this teacher, you know," or whatever, he passed away. Now, what he learned in those 4 hours was very, very substantial as well. He learned that he was a teacher. He was single. He had no family members left. He was all alone. And he left a note for him that night. I guess after he left to be with his family, he wrote a note and he said, "Dear Doc, I struggled year after year, but life was not easy or simple. You sat with me for only a few hours and made my death so easy, comfortable, and acceptable." Isn't that beautiful?
I don't even have a word for that.
He left for the doctor 3 cashier checks and entrusted in him. One check was going to go to a children's charity. He was a teacher. One check was going to go to a leukemia support group. And one check was to buy a dialysis unit for a nephrology unit because his sister died while she was on dialysis. And he was able to achieve that for him. All of that just for letting him talk, just for listening. And not just listening, directly listening. You know, deep listening. So getting back to the point about deep listening with end of life, it's especially important with end of life care. Simple open-ended questions can invite patients and families to offer otherwise undisclosed information. "What's the most important thing we could do for you today?" quote unquote. My line is, "How can I make your day better?" You know, not "what's the matter with you?" How can I make your day better? What can I do to make your life better? What can we do to help you? These are some of the things that come out of our clinic, which is, you know, in line, I think, with this strategy. What do you understand your prognosis to be? What are your concerns about what lies ahead? What trade-offs are you willing to make? "I'm willing to take the risk to go to Mecca to do my pilgrimage, even though I know it might kill me quicker or I might die on this trip. I want to go." So those are the things you want to know, right? What do you want to make decisions? Who do you want to make decisions if you can't? Healing conversations. I consider these healing conversations are part of the healing process. And I think that in closing, I'll just say, everyone has to die. And having a terminal illness makes death happen sooner. Most patients expect the experts to serve as anchors. A patient will often say or do something that lets you refocus on the truly important things in life. End-of-life care is a real balance between science and art. The grave end-of-life conversation needs sensitivity and a light touch. End of life and death can be made comfortable. respectful, and dignified, which everyone deserves. Deep listening is part of that process. It's part of that kindness that we can offer to a patient if we just shut our mouths, listen intently, give them the respect and dignity that they deserve, and read your patients. Read their words, read what they're saying, and more importantly, read what they're not saying. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Your thoughts.
I think that to sum up your words, it's really where we started. You know, it's all about kindness. But kindness can also be used in a very powerful way, whether it's with a letter, whether it's taking its time to, like the doctor did, to listen, which we talked about, deep listening, all those factors. It's like reading the word kindness, and then everything we touched base on today had a mechanism that attached to that word. And if only all of us, or one of us, or most of us, can choose to use that word kindness and apply it from what's really inside of us, the world will be a better place.
Thank you, Angel. Thank you. Raina, Len, as always, your work is so life-changing. I love reading your papers. I wish you were on with us commenting on your papers. Maybe in the near future, we can get you guys back on. Dr. Mehdi, I've never met you before, but thank you for your reflection. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Thank you. Rod Freeman, small biz up. Thank you. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, for your support and love. Thank you. To the board of directors whose hard work is serving our cancer survivors, thank you. Rebecca, thanks for meeting with us yesterday and helping us move forward with our now project of trying to get our podcast word out on our podcast to try to get some listeners and people involved. Thank you, and all the other board of directors. And as we end each podcast, on behalf of Angel and the other board members, we wish you a long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. We love you. God bless you. God be with you. God protect you. Please, Lord, please bless your practitioners and let them have the heart and the common sense to open their ears to not just listen to you, but to listen to you deeply. God bless you. Goodbye. Cheers. And peace.